Toward the end and after the conclusion of the Civil War, more than 557 freedom colonies were formed across Texas, with 8 in the city of Brenham. The colonies were formed by formerly enslaved citizens, often with the assistance of the federal government's Freedmen's Bureau, formerly known as the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, established by Congress in 1865 as a branch of the United States Army. It was to be a temporary agency formed to provide relief to thousands of refugees, black and white, who had been left homeless by the Civil War. The Camptown Freedom Colony in Brenham, Texas, no longer exists, but the Camptown Cemetery survives as a palpable reminder of a time when newly freed slaves had to learn to fend for themselves in the segregated South. Initiatives to unearth the story of the people who inhabited Camptown Freedom Colony and were buried in the cemetery are being conducted by numerous organizations, including the Texas 10 Historical Explorers, the Brenham Heritage Museum, the Texas Freedom Colonies Project, the National Park Service, and the Texas Historical Commission. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at the Camptown Cemetery for a visit with Jennifer Eckerman, Director of Tourism and Marketing for the City of Brenham, Texas, to discover the rest of the story.
My name is Jennifer Eckerman. I am the Tourism and Marketing Director for the City of Brenham. And for the last year and a half, we have been working on telling the story of freedom colonies in Washington County.
And what is a freedom colony?
Most freedom colonies were developed beginning towards the end of the Civil War. And so in Texas, once the formerly enslaved were emancipated, once we found out about that here in Texas, it's like all of a sudden people found out they were free. More than half of our county's population had been formerly enslaved. It's hard to even imagine that in a moment your life totally changes. And they hadn't been able to be educated. They had to learn to take care of their families. And with our history in this community, it was a very turbulent time here. So they needed to find places where they could feel safe. In Brenham, there were troops that were stationed here during the Reconstruction period. Camptown, one of our freedom colonies, was a place that the newly freedmen could find a place where they were safe, start their lives, and figure out how they would survive. We're sitting in Camptown Cemetery. We don't know the oldest grave here, but it was definitely during, right after the Civil War, when people started being buried here. Freedom colonies were normally developed around a church and eventually a school, businesses. All of those things are represented here. There are two churches that are a part of the Camptown history. There's this cemetery, and there was a school that started here, a black school, that eventually became Pickard High School. And so there's a lot of history here just right around us. But I think this cemetery is really, I think, a place where people started telling more stories. And as things were uncovered here over the years, there was a desire for more of the story to be told. We in Brenham had done a good job of finding a really fascinating story for us locally, which was the burning of Brenham in 1866, and did a good job of telling that story. We researched it.
What happened?
It was a very turbulent time here, right after the Civil War, and a lot of planters here. It was a very agricultural area. And so when emancipation happened, there were people needing jobs, not knowing how to work. The white agricultural part of the community didn't have people to help with the work on their property. And it was just kind of a violent time. There's a great story. There's a railroad that was being built between Galveston, trying to head to Austin. And right at the beginning of the Civil War, the train stopped here. And so there were people coming to this area, getting off the train and heading west, and people from the west coming. And there's a story about George Custer and his wife who came through Brenham on their way to Austin. And the memories of his wife, an old train trestle down here, riding the train, and everybody giving him a hard time about how dangerous it was, and I hope we make it over this. So she has some memories, and she talks about how when they got off the train in Brenham, they saw everybody had a gun. The youngest person they saw to the oldest person, everybody had guns. Yeah. And so it's definitely like a Wild West story that hadn't been told. And so we got to tell that story about the family that was building the railroad and stuff. What we came to learn over the years was that it was just half the story. It was one side of the story. When the research was being done, there wasn't a lot of local Black history that had been written. But luckily, there was a group that was started a little bit later called the Texas 10 Historical Explorers. And that group was dedicated to researching local Black history.
At what period of time did they start their research, roughly?
I would say probably around 2014 or 15.
Okay, so recent. Yeah.
Yes, it was recent. That was information that wasn't available when we were researching the Burning of Brenham story. And so it became more available, and we just realized we need to do a better job of sharing our full story. So with the Burning of Brenham story, we developed a little pocket park downtown, and it told that story. There's a cistern that was located there, and so it's a neat little pocket park in downtown, but it only told part of the story. So when we had the opportunity to host the Smithsonian exhibit, we thought this is a great time to come together to be able to tell this story. Having the Smithsonian coming to town gave us some credibility to go out and do fundraising for this. And so now when you go downtown and walk through Tobin Park and hear this and read about this really fascinating, well-documented story, we're able to say, but this is just part of what was happening in our community at that time. And we're now able to encourage people to learn about how these freedom colonies were settled in our area. And I think there was a professor at A&M, Dr. Andrea Roberts, who started a Texas Freedom Colonies project. And I think they have found more than 500 freedom colonies across the state.
Wow.
And they were across the South, too. But in Brenham and Washington County, there were 19 freedom colonies found in our county. So we in Bells Alley were able to tell the story of why we needed freedom colonies. I mean, there's a quote on the first one from someone, a formerly enslaved person, who said, "And just like that, we was free." And it's like, it's hard to even imagine that feeling, to have been enslaved for all those years and to know nothing else, not to be educated. And all of a sudden, you're responsible for taking care of your family and figuring out how to survive this very turbulent time. And so they found places they were safe. And Camptown was the first and probably the largest freedom colony in Brenham.
Any estimate of population?
I have not ever heard of a population estimate, but we did have a local newspaper here. And going back, you can start kind of picking and learning things about that you would start to read about Camptown. I think one of the most surprising things to me, I grew up in this community and never knew much about it.
So you didn't really hear the story?
No, yet. I didn't hear the story. And I think there are a lot of our local Black community that today is starting to learn the story, because it hasn't grown. So we're going back and telling the story. But one of the neatest things and most surprising to me is at one point there were 70 businesses here in Camptown. And so to think about this whole community that was living and living their lives. And I mean, downtown is just a few blocks away from here. And growing up here, it wasn't like one side of town and the other, the Black side or the white side.
Right. It was like a pocket.
Yes, it was just a little pocket. And after desegregation, I mean, that's why they're not here anymore, because people started opening businesses downtown and doing things like that. And so it just has gotten lost over time. So it's so much fun to be able to share these stories, first downtown with a general story about freedom colonies, and then here in Camptown. to share the stories of one of our freedom colonies.
To learn more, where do you direct people?
We are just finalizing this exhibit and trying to get it up and going for when the Smithsonian opens here. We have a webpage that right now has information about the Sound Walk and Freedom Colonies. I think the best place for the most general information is Texas 10 Historical Explorers. They have a lot of that information, and it's the best source for that. For more information like about the Sound Walk and to be able to hear that, if you can't come visit, you're able to go to visitburnhamtexas.com/Smithsonian, and that's where it can be found. And my name is Jennifer Eckerman, and I'm the Tourism and Marketing Director for the City of Brenham.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Okay. I really care a lot about it. I'm surprised it just kind of kept coming.
No, that's...
I can do that. I can talk.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Brenham, Texas. We'll see you here.
Phil McMahon.
You're an alpaca rancher?
I am an alpaca rancher.
Whereabouts are we?
We are in Burton, Texas, which is halfway between Houston and Austin.
And you've been raising alpaca, almost 20 years?
Actually, I think we bought our first animal 17 years ago in New Hampshire.
And that was an accident, right?
That was a vacation that we went on, and she fell in love with them. We bought one and left it there. You can't have one, you got to have a herd. So.
To have them breed? Or?
They're herd animals, so they have to have a companion.
Oh, they get all depressed on their own.
They do, and they won't do very well by themselves. But we bought the one, and then we kind of looked around here, see how we were going to do the ranch, because we lived in Houston in a subdivision. So we found this place, and then we ended up buying a couple more up in New Hampshire, and then a few more and a few more. And
then you bred quite a few, right?
Yeah, we did. We've had several breedings on the ranch here, and we've also had some outside breedings.
Peak of your herd, about how many?
I think we were up to 125 at one time. Right now, I think we're at 54, if I'm not mistaken. We've sold off quite a few. Of course, you got old age problems. But
so they live 18, 20 years?
18, 20 years. Like I say, there's one girl over there that's close to 24. But we just kind of let them do the rest of their life and just ease it into it, you know. So we shear them once a year and take that fleece and clean it before we send it off to a mini mill. At that mini mill, they will turn it into yarn or roving or whatever you want it to be. Some of the yarns off of our animals are actually in the store.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. But a lot of this goes into a co-op where they will take your fleece, turn it into clothing, and then they get clothing back, but it may not be yours.
Right, right. That's interesting. Is that kind of like just a bonus from an economic standpoint?
Yeah, there's a fair amount of money in the fleece. The profits primarily come from the finished clothing and the sale of animals. These animals sell between farms from time to time.
The breeding is a real economic center, right?
Yes. You know, you're always looking to increase or do better on each animal. So you pick your breedings to get the
what
benefit.
What do you look for?
You're looking for conformation, the straightness of the animal. You're looking for the style, head style. You're looking for the fleece, whether it's dense, has a lot of crimp to it. So you want to, those attributes you want to keep increasing and make them better. So you look for this girl here, we'd look for a male that was probably a little bit larger, probably a gray because she has a lot of gray in her. And you could get possibly a silver gray animal out of this one.
Is there an optimal color?
No, it used to be that it was primarily whites because the mills could take those and turn it into any color. You know, dye it whatever color they wanted. But now the fawns and the browns have gotten very popular. Blacks were not popular at all, but now they've turned into be a popular color. So,
and again, a prime bull or the offspring could bring
anywhere from 10 to 25,000.
Wow. So some people make a living at this, right?
There are several farms in the United States that's all they do.
But you have no interest in growing? You're happy.
We're trying to keep it at about 50 or so. It's easy to manage. And, of course, we're looking to do better on our herd every time we breed. But
thanks for sharing.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yeah, and your name?
Phil McMahon.
How does somebody follow you or find out about you on the web?
We have a website. It's PeekaRanch.com. PeekaRanch.com.
That's too easy.
So
you're probably Instagram.
Instagram, it's LMcMahon@PeekaRanch.com.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I'm Lynn L. McMahon. I am an alpaca rancher.
I love it. This was an accident for you, wasn't it?
Sort of, yes. Mm-hmm. It was not planned. It was not planned.
What touches you the most?
Just the whole animal in itself. It's just very calming, very lovable, very, you know, besides to touch them, to feel how wonderful that they feel. So
they really are very affectionate.
Oh, yeah. Alpacas, llamas, and camels, all in the camelid family.
The llamas and the camels have the reputation.
Mm-hmm. All of them do.
Alpacas, I don't hear about
them. Well, they will if everybody gets in a group to feed and they get in a group, then they're going to compete with each other.
Oh.
And that's their way of saying you're in my space.
Interesting. You're so cute.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Glad to have you guys out. No, I'm sure he filled you in on everything.
He did.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The devil's dead. The devil's dead. Know some folks says that.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
It's too late to pray. You will have to love or die today. It's too late to pray. You will have to love or die today. Oh, axes talk in a while. Oh, chips all fly.
Well, chips all fly.
Oh, the axes talk in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, chips all fly.
Well, the chips all fly.
Oh, maybe.
Uh-huh.
I put all together.
Well, all together.
You won't do nothing but
uh-huh.
Wash and iron.
Wash and iron.
You won't have to do nothing but
uh-huh.
Wash and iron.
Wash and iron.
Oh, when you marry
uh-huh.
A real road man.
Railroad man.
Oh, when you marry
uh-huh.
A real road man.
Railroad man.
Every day your son or dollar
uh-huh.
is in your hand.
Dollar
is in your hand.
Well, in your hand.
That looks like Mamie coming.
Uh-huh.
Well, down the road.
Well, down the road.
That looks like Mamie coming.
Well,
well, down the road.
Well, down the road.
It walks just like a butt.
Uh-huh.
She walks too slow.
She walks too slow.
It walks just like a butt.
Uh-huh.
She walks too slow.
Well, you walk too slow.
She walks just like she's carrying
uh-huh.
some heavy load.
Well, a heavy load.
She walks just like she's carrying
uh-huh.
a heavy load.
Well, a heavy load.
Try and look on your finger, Mamie.
Uh-huh.